Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Patrick Martins. You're listening to The Main Course. We're broadcasting live out of Roberta's Brooklyn at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I am very excited. This is my 196th show. And
congratulations.
Thank you, Joe. These other hosts are breathing down my neck. There's another show, Beer Sessions, that has like 187. Let's Get Real, I think, is right there. It's too much pressure. I'm going to be the first host to 200 episodes, and then I'm going to be comfortable with the fact that some people are going to pass me. What do you think, Joe? 200's a good number, 200's
right? A good number, but I say keep trucking.
Yeah, why I'm going to truck. Just it's not go like for I'm getting three. Into a Prius or anything. I'm going to keep going and, speed racing for 300, but I can't. I mean, Beer Sessions has like 10 beer guys on a week. I mean, they can keep on going. They're like a machine. I'm just one man, Joe.
That's true. You know what? You just put it at cruise control up to 300. I think it'd be okay.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I do want to thank S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. I always joke that he should change his website to S. Wallace Edwards & Sons & Friends so that it's officially the longest website in the history of the world. But we thank him for sponsoring the Heritage Radio Network for so many years. I want to thank you, Joe, for engineering, and Holly also for sitting in on another Sunday. I'm very excited. In a few minutes, we're going to bring on Joseph and Marco Chirico, who are owners, two generations, father and son, owners of a restaurant that achieved a 30-year milestone, which is really almost unprecedented. I mean, very, very, very few restaurants survive that long. And it's a restaurant right in my neighborhood, actually, and Ann and I go there about once every 2 weeks. And so when this came across the wire, I jumped at it. I was like, I got to have them on. No one knows their food better. So I'm really excited to have them on after the break. But our homepage is really interesting, Joe. Tell us about some of the stories. I noticed Charlie Trotter passed away at the age of 54, and HRN did a story actually on that same day interviewing a lot of his friends. I thought that was really solid coverage by the team. What else is on the homepage?
Right now we also have a great little piece from Ferment About It with Chris Kuzmi and Mary Izette about the different collections of yeast that homebrewers use. And this company called Y Yeast just put out a new collection that includes like a farmhouse ale yeast. So they talk with Greg Doss, who's from the company Y Yeast, about like how to use all these different yeasts in your homebrews to make something like unique and kind of weird and just something that you can't get out of a bottle or on tap at a bar or anything like that.
Very interesting. I also noticed there's an evolutionary piece on Ari Weinzweig, the co-founder of the Zingerman's Empire, which most people don't know is actually 8 businesses now. It's not just the one deli that most people know.
They have a barbecue joint and everything, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, no, very impressive. And what else? Any other good stories today? I know the stories change every day. So
the one that I just finished working on is this piece about this Scotch distillery on some island off the coast of Scotland that was founded in 1815, and it just has a lot of history in that community because it's an island. It's a very tiny island, so it's really interesting hearing how, as the Scotch maker on the island, what the distiller John Campbell had to say about trying to serve the community and kind of taking that into consideration in everything that he did. So it's pretty cool.
That's interesting. So, that's very exciting. Everyone should log on to the heritageradionetwork.org website and check out the new stories each day. And remember, we're a member-supported organization, and a $120 donation gets you a tote bag. We are going to take a very brief break and come back with father and son, the Kiriko team at Marco Polo in Carroll Garden. Stay with us.
You are listening to Andy's Biscuits by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surifarms.com.
All right. Well, you're listening to The Main Course. We're back. I'm Patrick Martins, your host, and we are in studio with Joseph and Chef Marco Kiriko. Welcome to The Main Course.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Thank you to have us here.
Yes, well, I know you have a new menu. You're unveiling your fall-winter menu, but more importantly, you just celebrated your 30th anniversary of the restaurant. I mean, that's a huge achievement. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Tell our listeners who haven't been to Marco Polo what they will see and experience when they walk into the restaurant on, if I'm recalling it, is Union Street and Court.
Quarter Union, yes. Marco Polo opened in 1983, and since then it's strived better and better. The neighborhood changed, you know, more and more for the good and new people to come in. And the new neighborhood, it's a more young generation. And Marco, my son, since he came in with me, and he's the chef now, the executive chef in Marco Polo, he wants to remodel the restaurant, which did a new for the new generation, for the young people, and I'm very proud the way he came, and I'm very proud of Mark, what kind of job he's conducting the restaurant, which is a new menu and new recipe, and he kept the really classic dishes we had from 30 years ago.
Very interesting. Yes, we're going to talk a lot about those original 1983 recipes, but it's a big restaurant. I mean, how many seats do you guys have?
Well, it's about like almost 120, and then we have a banquet hall upstairs.
Huh.
So that fits up to 130.
Wow, so that's for banquets. And then right next door, you have a kind of Inoteca type of easier...
Next door we have, it's pretty much like an Italian tapas wine bar, a little bit more casual than Marco Polo.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a graduate of Johnson & Wales, right?
Yep, correct.
And then when did you graduate from there? That's in Rhode Island?
Yep, okay. Providence, Rhode Island. I graduated in 2010.
Okay. So. And then you came back to the family business?
Yep, right after school, came right back.
So let's talk about the real influences, the genetic influences of Marco Polo. So what region of Italy does your families come from?
Well, I come from San Martino, Reggio Calabria, from Italy.
Reggio Calabria, which is...
Calabria.
Calabria. In the south, is that
south,
towards the south?
Yes, yeah. Over the south. And I came here in 1964. My first business I opened in 1968.
Were you the first of your family to come?
No, I'm the second. I had a brother here.
Okay.
And I opened the Luncheonette, Joe's Luncheonette, court right next door to Marco Polo.
Oh, really?
1968.
How did you think to do that? You always knew if I came to the States, I was going to bring Italian food?
Well, always I like the business. I was in business when I was in Italy, a very young boy. When I was 16, my father, he put me in business. And then when I came to this country, I figured that's the real life to be ahead and achieve to be in business.
Mm-hmm. Business is a huge accomplishment. So how did it start? You just found the space, and were you in the kitchen back then?
No,
I
was working in the neighborhood, and I became a good friend with the owner for that luncheonette, And then when he sell, he asked me if I want to buy it. And he says, you should buy, you young guy, and maybe that's your life ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And he encouraged me, and he helped me to get a start and go ahead. And I did it enough. And little at the time, I made a larger and larger, and I made more Italian food. And then I succeeded. And that's the way I went, and I started the food business and the way I like it.
Very, very nice. And and now, I mean, Court Street is still a predominantly Italian neighborhood, right? I mean, the Carroll Gardens, and I mean, I live on Fourth Place, and mostly Italians on it's strong Italian tradition.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah, it's very diverse. Mm-hmm. You see a couple blocks, very Italian, and it's all mixed up.
And how do the Italians, the hardcore Italians, do they like Marco Polo? I mean, are you trying to do authentic Italian to the best of your ability?
I try to keep them happy because, you know, since October, we redesigned the restaurant. And, you know, a lot of people miss the piano, miss the old, you know, feel. But, you know, I try to mix up the classic and the new.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to, you know, bring out the make everybody happy, because you know we don't want to lose the old customers, but we want to gain new customers.
Yes, exactly. So before we get into the menu, I mean, that neighborhood's very interesting. I've lived there for about 6 years. I'm born and raised in New York City, so I know. I mean, how old are you? I want to ask.
25.
So how has the neighborhood, I guess I'll ask your father, how has it changed?
I wasn't born yet.
Well, it changed a lot. When I opened Marco Polo in 1983, people, they thought I was crazy to open that classy restaurant. And I would challenge that, which always in my life I like a challenge. And I said, I have to open a restaurant like Manhattan, because in those days it was not a restaurant like Manhattan and Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So and I did it. But people, they would come in and they say, oh, you're crazy, you're not going to make it. But what happened, I chose my clientele, and I brought it in. Mm-hmm. And those days, the buffalo mozzarella, the porcini, the green mussel, you know, from New Zealand.
And truffles and all those. Yeah.
So that's people when they started coming. Before, you know, in a year and a half, they became old. The executive people come in and patronize at the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And those days, I was supposed to come in a jacket, you know, required.
Yeah. Oh, it's jacket required.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy you loosened that thing, because now I wouldn't have been able to go. I never wear a jacket. But very interesting. So who were your early clients? I mean, were they people from the neighborhood who just appreciated having a great Italian restaurant?
Yeah, no, all my clientele and all, it was all business people.
Okay.
Banks, lawyers, judges, mm-hmm. and it was all of those business people.
Mm-hmm. And were there any other restaurants that are still around today on that block? Well, there's Sammy's, that pizza place.
Yeah, Sammy's still around. Those days when I opened, it was all the way down Court Street. It was a Queen, Sammy, Udino, and it was Casa Rosa.
Casa Rosa, which is still there, still, right? They have a piano, I think, in their one, Well, very interesting. And now it's changed for the better, or is
now it changed for the better?
You think? I was going to ask.
I like a competition, and then now we have maybe a couple hundred restaurants in the neighborhood between Court Street, Smith Street. Everywhere they open a restaurant, which for me is good. Mm-hmm. I like the restaurant they open. I like it because of the competition. It's make you walk up a little bit. Mm-hmm.
And it brings more people to the neighborhood in general.
Yeah, because usually what I might believe, people, they can eat in a restaurant 3-4 times a week. They want to eat it once a week, mm-hmm. which is good to bring back the steady customers.
Yes, for sure. And now, Court Street is lovely. Smith Street has always seemed more change on Smith. I don't know why Smith seems so distant from Court. Court is just a beautiful, quiet street. You can't drive more than 10 miles an hour no matter what you do. It's like a low, slow river. But then Smith Street is different. I mean, have you noticed that there's more turnover?
Yes,
more
bars. Smith Street is more for young people. Clientele. Yeah. More Court Street, we have a little bit more upgrade restaurant.
Okay.
From everywhere, from Stata all the way from Atlantic Avenue down, it's a more better upgrade restaurant.
No, it's true. Well, Bezra, we get into the menu. One of the things, actually, we mentioned your restaurant on my show a few months ago as one of the few restaurants left in New York where you can basically get whatever you want. I mean, there's the menu, of course, yep. But your waiters, who are very charming and, you know, participate in the ordering experience, they say, well, tell me, what are you in the mood for? And you're like, well, I love eggplant. And they're like, well, how do you like it? Yeah. You know, and you guys in the kitchen are talented enough and open enough to, you know, I remember Anne was in her 9th month of pregnancy. And she read somewhere that she should have an eggplant parmigiano. And yeah. So they're like, of course we'll make it for you, you know? And that's like an old tradition of giving the people what they want.
That's the main thing, to keep everybody happy. And, you know, when you go into a restaurant, you always have that, like, the mindset of what you're in the mood for, you know? And, like, a lot of people are like, oh, what should I get? I'm like, and I always ask them, like, what are you in the mood for? What's your taste buds like? And they're like, eggplant. And, you know, we suggest different kinds, you know? The menu is there, but it's better when you please somebody with what they like and what they're in the mood for, and it's great.
Now, the waiters are the first kind of the soldiers that, you know, deal with the table and all of that, and I always see the same guys there. I mean, have you had some guys that have been with you for long periods of time?
Yeah, some of the waiters, they've been with me for 23 years.
Wow.
Yeah. The bartender over there for about 27 and 28, and have the kitchen staff, it's about 20... The youngster one in the kitchen who work with me, it's about 14 years. Mm-hmm. But everybody, 20, 22, 23. My ex-chef, I had, for me, worked for me 18 years.
Wow.
And he taught everybody the right way. This chef came from Italy, from Sicily. And there was an excellent chef and an excellent person, too. Mm. He retired now with the innocence of Marco Camovi, took over the kitchen and the modern the dishes, modern the menu, which is excellent, more light and more people what they like, the younger generation, they like that kind of food.
Yes, healthier, you know, lighter food. Yeah. So tell me, so you have this new menu, so what falls off and what comes on from a summer menu to a fall menu?
Well, you know, we try to keep it seasonal, you know, because the products, especially in the neighborhood now, when everybody starts eating like more nutritional and healthy, I try to keep everything light. A lot of people think, you know, classic Italian and Italian restaurant, everything's heavy, sauce and, you know, 10 pounds of cheese on everything. No, but I try to keep the same, you know, quality of taste that what they think of, but make it lighter. So they can actually make it to dessert.
Yeah, actually the dessert. But but you put on shanks and kind of heavier braised cuts also during the winter and in the summer later. But now Marco Polo explores new territory, you know, and you make all your own pastas, mozzarella, and sausage for the restaurant. You make it yourselves.
Yeah.
Wow, I mean, that's a lot of extra work.
We want to try to keep it authentic, you know, make everything in-house. That's... It's better because, you know, you get to explain to the customer, oh, this is a homemade mozzarella, you know, and explain to them. It's more entertaining.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Now, tell us about the Nduja and the Calabrese sausage, which are two things that you're particularly known for.
Yeah, Nduja, that's a, you know, one of the classic things from Calabria, from my father's hometown. And he actually makes it.
Oh, really?
He actually told me how to make it.
Because he did tell you?
I was like, what is this?
And, he left out one ingredient, though.
Yeah. No. He didn't tell me the whole recipe. But
So what is that? What makes it calabrese?
Well, what it makes it is the way that the proceeding from this sausage. This is like a sausage by you. What you do, you're going to put a lot of pepper, hot peppers, and the meat and a little bit of belly fat also from the pork.
Yeah. Okay.
And the pork meat, you're going to cure it for about 60 days. And hang them, which I do. This I do in upstate. We have a farmer there. And we cure for 60 days. Mm. And then we bring it down. We leave them again on the table to keep it cured. And this is a very spicy, but very, very tasty. You can make it with the spread on the bread, which people, they love. Or we can put them on top of the pizza in Rotega. Uh-huh. And then Marco Polo will make it with the pasta. A big, called candele, a big pasta around tubing. And it was excellent. That's very, very good.
Well, let's talk about those pastas. So, I mean, pasta is a big section of your menu always. Yeah. And, I mean, what is it? There's maybe 10, 12 pastas on at any one time.
Yeah, that's everybody comes to pasta. But that's one of the highlights of our menu because everything is made fresh.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, we have the dry pasta soup, but we have also gluten-free. to actually keep up with the time right now.
Keep up with the time. Well, you have the fettuccine, gnocchi, agnolotti, tagliolino,
nero,
risotto alla ragosta, fettuccine, pappardelle, linguini. Yeah. It's really anything you want, you have there.
You want to try to make everybody happy, and you want to try to have a big diverse menu, because, you know, if you have a narrowed menu, a lot of people are like...
Well, yeah, most every restaurant, they're like, we've selected these four things, and you can choose from the four, and you're like... But
One of our signature dishes, the fettuccine al vino rosso, toasted the Parmigiano Reggiano. This is one of our signature dish. So, people, they come, and that's what they're looking for. Yeah.
That dish we do actually tableside.
Okay.
The pasta is made with homemade with red wine.
And you do it in the big wheel, right?
Yep. Yeah, I've seen that. And then we scrape up the wheel right next to the table, and then we put the pasta in the wheel and toss it around, and then we serve it.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. And these pastas, I mean, what's the toughest one to make? I mean, it's time-intensive, right, to make these pastas?
Yeah, it is. Well, the hardest one actually is the... Because the summertime, I had actually a homemade pasta made with farro and snake zucchini.
Okay.
So it's two different types of pasta. Huh. So, you know, you want to try to, like, you know, stay ahead of the game and try to make new things. So that was kind of hard to try to figure out, because there's no recipes out there for it. It's something new, and, you know... I always try to challenge myself to do...
Break
new grounds. And then the season, since it's like now fall, winter time, I change it to walnuts and chestnut.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, and then we made the sauce gorgonzola with radicchio. Mm-hmm. And I cut it with radicchio because it makes... Because the gorgonzola is very powerful. Huh. But when we cut it with radicchio, it makes it nice and light and enjoyable. So you taste all different kinds of flavors.
Cuts against it for sure. Yeah. So now you have some 1983 recipes. I mean, I know it's the lamb, right? And I see the Caesar salad.
The lamb chops, yep.
So what makes those particularly unique and that people keep demanding it?
What makes it unique, guys, I grew up in the business. I didn't even know about the recipes.
Yeah.
So, like, it's so amazing how the consistency of a dish, you know, a lot of people say, you know, most important thing about a restaurant is to stay consistent, stay, you know, never change a recipe. And people come, and you notice it over time, because people come all over the world just to come try that one dish, an Oyster Rockefeller's, a Caesar salad. And so I have a lot of people come back from, like, who haven't come back in 5 years. They live in Texas now, or they live in California.
But they know they want.
Yeah, they know. They come in, they're like, you have a Caesar salad? Like, yes. Huh. And when they taste it, they're like, wow, it's still the same. Same tastes the same. It's always anything never changed.
Yeah, it never changes. Things are things stay the same. That's nice that some things don't change. So now, of all the purveyors, I always hear the fish guys are the toughest to work with because their food always spoils so fast. You know, so they're always like, "You got to take this." So, I mean, you must pull from many different purveyors. Is it a challenge to be sourcing for such a wide menu? Because I'm looking at the menu, and our listeners should really log on to the Marco Polo website. I mean, it's got... It's just a very large menu. There are many, many options.
Yeah, but we're very strict on the purveyors. And, like, you know, the fish especially, you know, if something comes in and we don't like it, we send it back. And I'll say, we'd rather serve something that's fresh and well-deserved than something bad, you know?
Yeah, no,
and then some days a week, I go to the fish market myself at Hunts Point and
pick
out my...
Do you go up there?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, you know, you get there around 3 o'clock in the morning, the boats come in, you know, I have a couple of friends out there that... And he helped me out. They show me what the best fish is, and that's what I do for the special for the weekend.
Mm, very nice. And yeah, when since you have so many things on the menu, I imagine cycling through it. So you might put a special on or something like that.
Yeah, actually, everything actually moves
because you're so full all the time. Yeah. That's a luxury to turn over.
Yeah. Well, you know, throughout the menu, we try to use each product multiple ways and. Even for lunch too, so everything cycles through very nicely. There's not one favorite, there's not one least favorite. Everything, like, you know, during the weekend on Saturday, everything goes out equally. The ricotta and portobello appetizers from the fried artichokes, you know, that's what you want to try to do, is make everything equal. Not, you know, if you have a product on a menu that's very popular, you want to try putting out a product that to actually equal it out.
Sure For sure. El vini. Do you do the wines, or you do the wines?
Yes, so the wine, and we have...
You have a lot of wines.
A lot of wine. Matter of fact, when we redid the restaurant, we built a wine room, which is in the main dining room, and it's cooling, you know, the temperature, and for the red wine, and the white, we have the refrigeration. but wine we have from all over the world almost.
And you select them from
yes,
the things you like?
Yes, most of the
like?
Time, yeah. Me and Mark, we go to wine tasting. Oh, yeah. They invite us.
Teeth get all red from all the wine.
Yeah, but we have a wine from, you know, Farniente, Amarone, Bertane. We have a Tignanello.
That's the other thing I love when I come to your restaurant. It, the same just like the food. You're like, wine, I buy the glass. I'm like, Barolo, Barbaresco. They're like, of course, we got it. You know, most restaurants have one or two, and you don't always get
to choose. Have a lot of wine by the glass also.
Yes.
And red wine, which I like to put a good glass of wine. People, they don't like to buy a whole bottle, which today it's not the way it used to be. A few years ago, people are scared to drive, and they want a good glass of wine. So we serve a good glass of wine by the glass.
Yeah. Mm. Very good. Well, we're going to take a brief break and come back and talk about school and apprenticeship and Italian culture. So stay tuned for the last segment of the main course. I'm your host, Patrick Martins.
You're listening to Without You by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org today.
We are back. You're listening to the main course. We're in studio with Joseph and Marco Chirico, who are Calabrese expatriates living in Brooklyn, celebrating the 30th anniversary of the restaurant Marco Polo. I asked Anne, I was like, what question should I ask, you know, these guys? And she gave me some good questions, but she said, ask Marco if when he was, you know, going to the pool, if everybody would be like, you know, playing Marco Polo and you thought you worked for the most successful restaurant of all time. You're like, everyone at the pool, they knew me. They knew the restaurant. I thought that was a funny question. But so we were just saying on the break, I didn't know this. You have actually importing certain machines. I know how important the machine is when making sausage, pasta, or gelato. So you've actually taken the trouble to import these from Italy to the U.S.
Right. We did a machine they make, and then they make for work in this country, you know, with the electricity we have here, because we have 110 or whatever, but they are 220 also. But anyway, this machine, if you make a pasta, you have to be from Italy.
Hmm.
That's the best to make the right pasta. The, a lot of cuts, different cuts over the of the pasta. The gelato machine is the same way. You're going to have the Carpigiani, you know, to make a good ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
That's called gelato, no ice cream.
Right.
So you make it from, and all ingredients, they come from Italy, particularly from Sicily.
Mm-hmm.
The best product for making gelato.
Hmm. Very interesting. So yeah, the machine matters. So you were really a contemporary also of Lidia Bastianich then. I mean, more or less, for Lidia was few years with you, more or less the same period.
Yes, for Lidia, you know, she's a very, I would say that I look up to her. She's a very, very excellent, successful people. And they always have in the TV and a lot of talent, mm-hmm. and have good food, good restaurants.
And both you and her brought these ingredients from Italy to the U.S., one of the early pioneers of that. No, very interesting. It's amazing to think now everyone talks about local, but in the mid-'80s, people didn't even have Italian food here. You know, they didn't have anything.
It was very hard to find the right product in those days, but they would ship in once a week or once a month, which is good. And now we have every other day the plenty. Talk about the buffalo mozzarella and the ricotta de buffalo also, burrata, which is something, it's a special that they make in Italy. And this is, they come almost twice a week. Those days, we never have this. The buffalo mozzarella was coming once a week. Now they can get them anytime, but that's very good product from Italy. And the level-minded people, they say they make the buffalo mozzarella here in this country, never come the same.
Why is that? You think it's...
The water and the milk. They don't have the buffalo milk here. Yeah. They have a buffalo in upstate New York, but it never came in the same, though.
Interesting. And what's the lifespan on these products? Just a few days, and then they're bad already. So.
Yeah, but three days.
Still very
the burrata, we sell, when we get the burrata come in every Tuesday or Thursday.
Okay.
When it come on Thursday, in Friday, almost is gone. And we look if something left over for Friday, for Saturday.
Very interesting.
People, they go, you know, crazy with that.
Yeah, no, the ingredients, Italy still does certain things totally unique. So now you studied at Johnson & Wales, and then you came and worked at the restaurant. So would you tell our listeners who are going to, you know, be chefs, would you recommend school to them, or would you recommend just working in a kitchen and learning through, you know, hard knocks?
You kind of need both, really. Working in the industry growing up, like around 12 years old, you know, I started busboying, helping out like on Saturdays. And you get a lot of experience from working in a restaurant. But like school-wise, they teach you the basics. And you also work on your networking. By going to school, you meet a lot of different people, diverse people. The kitchen also, like if you just work in an Italian restaurant, you're going to learn Italian cooking. But by going to school, they teach you all different, diverse cuisines. And one of my favorites is Japanese cuisine, because their culinary, their art also on the dish, it kind of inspires me to make sure, you know, food can taste great, but the look, people eat with their eyes a lot. And, you know, by decorating a dish is very important. That's why, you know, I always lean towards the Japanese dishes. And sometimes he sees me looking at going to the Japanese restaurant, sushi. He's like, why are you going there? It's not Italian. And I'm like, no. Like, but you have to see the decoration. It's beautiful.
But the Italians have crudo, right? Which is
a
form of sushi, I guess.
Yes.
I guess my final question is the question about generations working together under the same roof. Now, do your three sisters also work at the restaurant?
They work when they were young. They started work, especially my old daughter, Dana. She worked with me. Once they got married, they had children. Then I work wrong. But the other two, one she's a fashion designer, and the other one she's a nutritionist.
Okay.
So they have no part of the restaurant. But she gave us a lot of ideas what are we doing all the time.
Yeah, I see the gluten-free thing.
Yeah, my youngest sister, Roseanne, she helps me out a lot with the nutritionist. She goes, no, you have to put this. It's healthy. I'm like, okay.
So now, was it very tough working with your dad day in and day out, and then it got better, or was it always easy?
It hasn't actually been bad.
Okay.
Tell you the truth, we get along very good, and you know, I love listening to him. I love learning from him. You know, every day teacher. I never, you know, we sometimes butt heads, but it's always a learning experience to see what he does and how things come about. He's like, no, you have to do it this way. Then like I look at him, I'm like, okay, let me listen, and then later on it becomes true. Like he was right, and that's one of the biggest things. You always learn and always take in what you can get, and that's the biggest thing for me. It's like, listen.
Yeah. And you grew up going to the restaurant, and then you go to school, and you come back, and then you're the boss. Was that tough to, you know, see all these older guys who you've been working with for a number of years, and you're like, now I'm going to be running this place?
Yeah, it is tough because, you know, a lot of the guys saw me grow up and actually took care of me as a baby. So in that aspect, it was rough. But opening Enoteca was kind of like my spotlight. It was something I did, like, you know, he helped me out, but I did it on my own, created these new dishes. And, you know, a lot of people were like, wow, he actually did it. You know, opening this restaurant, successful, open over 5 years now.
They taste the pizza and they're like, damn, this is pretty good. This kid knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and then the pizza recipe, too, is like, you know, we had a couple of guys from Italy come. Especially one guy from Sicily, he taught us his pizza recipe. It was great. And he had to go back to Italy. So in a 2 weeks time span, I had to learn how to make this pizza. Uh-huh. And, I didn't give up. I learned it right away. And ever since that day, the pizza's been consistent. And that's one of the important things to do.
Yeah, no, consistency is very important.
And like you said, the buffalo mozzarella, the burrata, you can't really make it here. But, like, you know, I try to be, you know, new. I try to think of something modern. And nowadays in Enoteca, we just put on a menu homemade mozzarella stuffed with, like, dry figs, arugula, balsamic. Something new, something to try to do different, and it's been actually really good.
Wow, I'm a personal big fan. Like I say, I eat there a lot. It's just fun to go to these restaurants. It's great for kids because there's room, there's space. You get a drink in 5 minutes. The wine is delicious. I mean, everything is just fun, and it was funny. And I was like, Ann, don't order off the menu. But she's from Chicago and in the Midwest. She's like, I don't know how to do that. I don't know what to say. But so she didn't know how to do it. But the father, her father from Chicago, he loves your place. So every time they come in to visit the grandkid, we're always there with 10 people. And Anna and I go once a week. So we're big fans. And I really wish you the best and for
Thank
another 30
much.
Years.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. It's very good. Very good from you. And it's luck with your station. And from now, we're going to listen more and more. And if it can be any help to you for good station, we can do anything we can do with
you. Fantastic. Co-host, you let me know, right?
Yes, yes. No, we do. And
we switch. You go in the kitchen.
Now that we've broken the ice and you've been on, there's a lot of other shows. So you guys should come in and talk about the things that make sense and keep us updated on menu changes and
of
all
course,
that.
Of course, no problem.
So anyway, you've been listening to the main course. I'm Patrick Martins. Coming up next is What Doesn't Kill You, hosted by Katie Kiefer. And thank you, Joe. Thank you, Holly, for running the back. Joe?
Sorry, I dozed off there for a second.
Yeah, I knew you were asleep. God, my shows are never young enough for this kid. Jesus, he's so cool. Anyway, all right. Well, have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll be back next week with another edition of The Main Course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.